Welcome back to Go Mountain Goats. I'm your host, I'm Finlay Wild, a hill runner and mountaineer from Fort William. This is episode 32, and I'm delighted to be talking to James Gibson about his incredibly busy year. Now, James has definitely had more than his fair share of mountain sunrises and sunsets with all these amazing days out, long days out in the hills. Initially, I was thinking I could compile some stats of all the summits or maybe all the time you've been out on these rounds in the past year. But basically, it was too complex. There was too many, and I soon gave up on that. And if you're listening, you don't know what I'm talking about, you soon will, because over the last over a 6 or 7 month period earlier this year, James has done the winter Big Three UK rounds. Which was over 6 attempts, Glen Etive round, 2 huge Coolin rounds on the Isle of Skye with 70 and 60 peaks each. And prior to that, I think he was the first ever Wainwright's winter round, and the second fastest ever sort of summer Wainwright's, yeah. Which was actually in spring, and you had some snow as well there, I saw. Other stuff as well, like the Lakes, Meres and Waters round, Joss Naylor's round. So James, welcome to my podcast. Congratulations on your absolutely prolific year.
Thank you very much. Yeah, happy to be here.
First, just tell us a bit about yourself and what you do.
Yeah, so I've lived in the lakes for the last 12 years and I work in the outdoors. So basically, that's a variety of working in the hills, taking people out on the hills, iconic peaks such as like Scafell Pike and, the high ones in the lakes.
Yeah.
I take people sort of rock climbing, bit of scrambling, mountaineering. Quite a variety of different activities. And then I've only actually been running for the last sort of 5 years. Unlike some people, I haven't run like my entire life. So it's a relatively new sort of activity. It was actually through a good friend of mine, Joe Mann, which I think you know.
Okay, yes. So
he sort of persevered for me to get out running just with him. And I finally ended up sort of giving up to him and going out on the hills. Just did like the Fairfield Horseshoe, which was, local sort of round. Well, not sure, round, yeah. But yeah, just sort of horseshoe near Ambleside at the time. When I went out with him, I didn't find it too hard. It felt fairly comfortable running around the sort of the hills. So I thought it'd be a good idea to sort of essentially try a bit more. So I reckoned sort of, leg one of the Bob and really enjoyed it. And I managed to sort of stay on pace and essentially sort of it built up from there. And I went and did sort of further and longer over a period of time. So that's my sort of introduction to running.
And on the Bob, did you not set off for a recce, but then just to decide to keep going and do the whole thing?
Yeah. So essentially the recce of the Bob, the leg one was probably like my third or fourth run.
Really?
And then maybe like 1 or 2 weeks after that, I went and I thought it'd be a good idea to maybe recce leg 3, 4 and 5, starting from Dunmail, finishing in Keswick. And during the day, it was amazing forecast. It was a spring day. I think it was in May. Supposed to be at work the next day. But essentially, I was having such a great time. And, I managed to basically get to Keswick within the 24 hours. And Joe essentially turned around to me and said, James, you're within the time limit to maybe finish this under 24. Why don't you keep going? So this was probably on leg 4 at the time. So just before getting to Honister. Basically, I sort of tried to hustle a few friends and stuff to support me on those last two legs because I was by myself at the time. I had a friend help out on the sort of leg one, which is the Skiddaw Blencathra leg. And then Joe did the sort of long overnight section on the Helvellyn range and he managed to get back to Dunmail just not far over 24 hours.
Amazing.
But I definitely felt that the day after from not doing much at all. So
Let me just, I think I'm just going to turn this mic around
just a little bit.
Yeah,
maybe it's my one. Because
what strikes me as just so incredible about that story is, yeah, you just hadn't really done a huge amount of distance stuff. You hadn't built up to sort of big distances, and there you are, you know, on 100K. And it just seemed that you just took it like a duck to water.
Yeah, well, I definitely felt it the day after. I was, like I said, I was supposed to be in work the day after in the primer shop. And thankfully, they gave me a sort of pass on coming in. But yeah, I guess I've thought about this a few times, but I think the reason I could probably do so much so soon was because I work on the hills.
Yeah.
So I've sort of maybe built up that like endurance of being on your feet for a long period of time over, you know, years of working in the hills. So I think it's probably that I've, you know, I've come to probably running from that, to be honest.
And yeah, I suppose building on that thought, you know, you spent a lot of time guiding in Skye as well and in Scotland. So did that stand you in good stead for?
Yeah, absolutely. Like, I've been going to Skye for the last, 5 or 6 years now, maybe a little longer. And over that period of time, I've done, you know, multiple ridge traverses with clients or with friends. So yeah, like, Skye is such a especially Coonan Ridge is such a complex pace. It's taken me a long time to like learn different lines, and
sure,
I'm sure you'd feel the same with when you did your, you know, traverse.
And that's the joy of it,
But yeah, it just takes a long period of time to learn different lines and where to go, where not to go, and yeah, definitely.
And the winter side of your work, the sort of winter mountaineering, how did you find that translated into then? Obviously, you're the first person to do the big three sort of solo unsupported rounds in one winter, aren't you?
Yeah, yeah.
And the first person to do a fully solo unsupported winter Ramsey's round. John Gay had a almost unsupported one prior to that, but yes.
Yeah, I mean, winter's like my favourite time of year, really. It's sort of like the extra challenge you get from, you know, being in the hills. Like, it's like the elements are much harder to cope with. The terrain is much, much harder to move over. So yeah, I think, you know, being in those environments in winter, it definitely sort of pushed me to do, you know, different types of challenges. And after doing like the winter Wainwrights you know, having so much help from people, a lot of people that I'd never actually met before either. So this shows how strong the sort of fell running community is. I wanted to do something completely different, whereby, you know, I was self-sufficient. And I'd thought about the idea, and I'd spoken to Martin a few times about it, but sort of I had a go last year and I had, you know, multiple attempts at it, failed multiple times at it, and I just had to keep that perseverance to stay with it and try and get the right conditions, but also try and do it within the time frame, which was actually quite short. Yeah. Winter's not a very long time.
Yeah. Martin, you mentioned there, Martin Stone, who was the first person to do a midwinter solo Bob Graham round, wasn't he, in the lakes in 1987, and he's got this fabulous recording of that he made, you know, shortly after doing that, which is on one of my earlier episodes. He was kind enough to let me put that out there. And he's sort of become one of the kind of absolute go-tos for knowledge and history of these long-running feats in the UK, hasn't he?
Absolutely, yeah. And well, on your podcast on that, I listened to that podcast in particular multiple times as well, just to, you know, it's an inspiring story to hear. And yeah, it's I chatted to him about multiple things, but yeah, it's awesome to do something like that. And with the kit, you know, the weight of the kit back then, it's so much different to now. You know, if you look at kit nowadays compared to, you know, in the 80s, you know, it's much, much heavier and, you know, and lighter these days. So hats off.
Yeah. And that's maybe something we'll come back to again. But yeah, like, I think his head, you know, he had like 4 head torches with various battery kind of combinations and spares. And, you know, it's all these cumulative gains of like the lighter clothing, lighter, you know, torches, equipment, everything. And then I suppose the safety aspect, there is, you know, GPS trackers and mobile phones and and things like that. So yeah, it's come all, it's really interesting the way it's come along over the years.
Yeah, it's quite easy to forget that sometimes as well. You know, when people have done stuff like that in the past, it's quite easy to forget how much more weight they might have been carrying, or you know, the kit on the shoes, like it was, you know, different compared to these days. So yeah, very inspiring.
And what, how did you get into the outdoors? Like briefly, did you sort of go into them from a very young age, or when did you get involved in the outdoors?
Yeah, I mean, I've sort of always been doing stuff in the outdoors, not obviously like, you know, walking and that side of things. I used to be into mountain biking when I was younger.
Okay.
So yeah. When I finished school every day, I was always out on my mountain bike doing stuff like that. Okay. And then it took a while to sort of figure out what I wanted to do in life, like probably most people. But my interest was definitely being in the outdoors. So I pursued like, an outdoor sort of college course, and then that went into an outdoor degree actually in Cumbria. So that's how I moved from Cornwall to Cumbria. So I studied outdoor leadership. And then once I actually got to the Lake District, I, you know, started delving into different activities such as like, you know, climbing, mountaineering, and then eventually running. So I guess, yeah, I've always been interested in it, but not so much like the aspects of running, for example. So it's probably just through friends and, you know, being inspired to go and do different things and, you know, different weathers and stuff as well. So
I think that's it. That's a big part of it, isn't it? It's always interesting how people's, you know, routes can be really different. Some people were sort of doing loads of cross country and track stuff as kids, and other people kind of came into the running more from other sports. And
yeah.
So at the start, obviously, I listed off some of these achievements. It's very quick to say them, but much longer to do them. And it's a huge list, which, you know, people can go and read about it on in the Fjällrunner magazine. There's various UK climbing articles about it, and probably Innovate articles and things as well. But yeah, I was going to ask you, so if you had to pick like your favorite kind of round from the last year, like what would it be?
I'd probably say the ones on Sky. I don't think I would pick out a particular one, whether that be the Transcoolin or the Coolin round, because they were very different days. So when I did the Coolin round, the weather was much better. So it was like sunny, it was hot. So that was different. So there wasn't as much water either. So, you know, it's harder in that aspect.
And tell us the sort of layout, the kind of difference between those two.
Yeah. So for quite a long time, probably like last 2 or 3 years, I've wanted to do the Transcoolin, which is essentially like a west to east traverse of, well, 70 Coolin tops, and including like outliers. But yeah, so it sort of starts over near Glenbrittle, just on, traverses, you know, essentially the whole Coolin Ridge, including like other tops. And then you work your way over sort of towards Skernestry, which is that amazing sort of view into the Coolins. And then from there, you sort of go across and pick up like, Blarven, cross Clack Glass, and all the way down to, Glamaig. Then from there, you drop down to the road on the sort of eastern side of Glamaig, and then you essentially pick up some of the Corbetts. I'm pretty sure it's Corbetts or Grahams, but that are in between there and Broadford, and you finish on Ben Nicalloch. So yeah, it's a huge, in terms of distance, it's not that much, but it's the terrain that you're moving over. So you obviously know yourself, but you know, moving over some of the Coolin tops, it's slow going, you're not moving very fast. And to link all that together, it's such an awesome day. And then the Coolin round, is that sort of, again, start and finish in the same place, but you do all these epic hills. So when I did them, I only think I had like maybe 10 days between the two, maybe a little longer, but
amazing.
There wasn't that much time. So for me, when I didn't anticipate on doing two at the same time. It just so happened to work that just so happened that I was working up there at the same time.
Okay.
And I saw a good weather window and I was like, well, you can either do it now or you can do it in a few years' time. So seeing that you feel all right, why don't you have a go at it? And yeah, that's what I did. And yeah, it was such an amazing day. For the transcooling, I spoke to Rob Woodall, who had attempted it back in 2001 or three, I can't remember. Yeah, in early 2000s, essentially.
I think 2001, yeah.
Yeah, 2001. And, you know, I expressed my interest last year and I plans to have a go at it, but with Sky, the weather's so fickle. It takes time to get the right weather window and the right sort of time off to have a go. And this spring seemed to be the one, and yeah, I took my opportunity and went for it.
Yeah, you've got to have the weather, you've got to be off work, you've got to be feeling fit, haven't you?
Mm-hmm.
Be in the right place. So various things have to come together.
Yeah, and then doing that off the back of, you know, the big three in winter and lakes, meres and waters, I was probably, you know, the fittest that I'd been ever, really.
So because the big three were within about a 10-week period, is that?
Yeah, that's right, yeah.
But that was sort of six attempts. So that's a lot of running.
I know. Yeah, a lot of driving around the country and stuff as well. But so for me, when I attempted it, I wanted to do it in like proper winter conditions. So I didn't want to do it where, you know, it might be like summer conditions on the hill, but it's like mid-December.
Sure.
So I wanted it to be like winter. So trying to wait for weather windows that are like that. Some winters it just don't come, do they? But not lakes and sort of Snowdonia. But so sort of started off on the paddy. That was sort of like early in December. And to my surprise, there was much more snow than I anticipated. So I had a go. I think I started off with maybe like 8 kilos in my bag, so I had way too much stuff in there. And as a result, you know, I didn't move fast enough, and the snow was really soft, so it was taking ages to try and get anywhere. So yeah, I decided started at Ogwin, and I think I bailed like halfway between the Capel and Nantmore leg. And so on that one, I didn't really get too far. So then I got back home and I was like, well, this is going to be quite hard to try and have a go at all these. But I stayed persistent. And then a couple of weeks later, there was an amazing weather window of like really dry, cold conditions. So in the lakes, I thought I'd have a go at the Bob. So this is sort of like maybe like mid-December, I think it was. And had, you know, an amazing day in winter on the Bob Graham. So I remember driving to Keswick and it being like -9. So it's like proper cold.
Okay.
So all the hills were just icy. It was only a little bit of snow, so it wasn't like loads. So it was perfect for like running and covering distance. I managed to get back to Keswick after an epic day, sort of trying to at times smash through like streams to get water.
Really?
So it felt like a proper winter round.
And did you go anti-clockwise?
Yeah, I went anti-clockwise,
Okay.
Just the reason being is that I wanted to have leg three, which is the technical leg, in light, essentially.
Yeah.
So I sort of thought start early in the morning rather than starting late at night. And yeah, it seemed to work right, actually. Although you did have that big climb up Skiddaw at the end, which at that time, that time of the round was, quite hard. But so I managed to do that and I was really happy with my time. I just wanted to get under 24 when I had a go, and managed sort of 21:12, I think it was.
Okay.
Which I was, very happy with. And then I think early January, I think I might have texted you actually and asked you about sort of what you thought conditions were like and stuff. And it sounded like it was going to be like really nice, firm, never at the top. So I started the Ramsey, and it wasn't. Essentially, like, it warmed up quite a bit at the top, so there was like this hard crust and quite a lot of snow. There was a lot more than I anticipated. So again, like, I knew pretty early on the Memoirs, so going anti-clockwise, anti-clockwise, it wasn't going to happen. So I think I got to Angiarnock.
Yeah.
If to pardon my Gaelic, but and then I decided to essentially bail off, so that was two failed attempts. So I knew it was going to be hard, and I was really anxious actually going into the Ramsey. For, you know, particular sections like getting up to what's it called now? Near the end, essentially.
Annet Begg.
So that's quite a sort of tricky section. So yeah, I mean, I wasn't covering the distance fast enough anyway. Okay. So yeah, I bailed off that. And then I think I might have had a go at the paddy again. And again, there's too much snow. So this might have been early February or late January, early February. And basically started again. It might have started in Lambaris actually. So I went clockwise, and I managed to get sort of just past where I got to on the first attempt. So sort of between Capel and Nantmore. And I ended up falling in one of the bogs, sort of like above my waist. You probably know what I mean. And it was really, really cold. I literally felt like I was hypothermic. And so I sort of had to make the sensible decision of like just bailing off. So thankfully I had someone who I knew in sort of Snowdonia that came to bail me out, warm me up, gave me air, fed me in. Yeah, and then I sort of like almost lost interest of it. I was like, oh, this is going to be too hard to try and finish these last two in such a small period of time, which was, you know, only like 4 weeks, I think, by the time I had left.
Because good winter running conditions, that, you know, you want it, like you said at the start, you want it to be proper winter, but then, you know, too much soft snow doesn't really lend itself very well to fast progress on foot.
Yeah.
So you want that kind of cold, sort of nice, firm
That's
conditions,
it, exactly.
Which then have their own problems, like you said, getting water and things like that.
Yeah, so quite hard to get. So yeah, I think I might have put it on the back burner for maybe like 2 weeks. I was like, yeah, I don't think I'm going to be able to get this done. But, you know, like you'll probably relate to it as well, but a switch goes in your head and you're like, okay, can maybe have another go. The weather looks pretty good. So I was like, well, I'm going to have a go on the paddy once more. So this is the third time I attempted it this winter. I'll have a go, and if I don't get this, then at least I've given it all I can. So the weather was amazing. It wasn't as wintry as like the previous ones that I had a go, but it was cold enough that there was like bits of ice on the very top, and you know, it was cold at times. So yeah, I managed to finish that, which I was super, super happy with. So I was like, game on, right, just need a weather window for the Ramsey now. Which, you know, in Scotland, it's quite hard to get like high pressure days.
And you had quite a set timescale, didn't you?
Because
you wanted to do it between...
Between the winter period.
The set is the 1st of December and the end of February.
Yeah, last day of Feb. So I think I might have had like 2 weeks to finish it. And looking at long range, I had thankfully had this like, you know, perfect conditions that were forecast like end of Feb, maybe with like 2 days left till the end of winter. So it was like, well, I've got one more shot left to have a go. And again, it was like, you know, it was proper winter at times. Maybe not so much on the moors. I think it's sort of been stripped out quite a bit, but then, you know, on the back sort of five rows there, and then across the grey quarries and over towards the bend, it was like, it was proper winter. And again, like just had the most amazing 24 hours or whatever it was. And yeah, I had to actually use my winter experience as well. So, sort of getting off Biddy & Moore, you know, into that quarry.
Yeah.
It was like bullet hard, never. And, you know, I had micro spikes, but they can only do so much. They're not, you can't like front point down a slope. So I had my axe and yeah, basically had to cut steps down into the quarry. And first time I had a go, like I just watched my, you know, gel fly out of my bag and just fly down this slope. And I'm like, oh God, I hope that's not me soon. And I'm by myself, you know, no signal back there at all. I think I was staying in touch with Martin at the time as well, just keeping him updated. And yeah, I was just sensible. I went down a little bit further. So I went off route slightly, just deviated just to be sensible and cut my way down into the quarry. And there was a few other moments like that throughout the round, but ended up sort of finishing back in Glen Ellis under 24 hours. And then no one else was there and got in my car and went for a sleep and went back home.
What did it feel like finishing that, finishing the trilogy, the winter trilogy?
Yeah, satisfied, put that way. Like I mentioned, the Ramsey, I was definitely very anxious going into that, just because I knew how serious it was and how remote it was. So to have that on the very last round as well, yeah, of the three, you know, just highlighted such an amazing winter sort of, you know, yeah, trilogy. So yeah, I was very, very happy. And yeah, I was looking forward to a rest, but then I'd have plans to do things. So
how much rest did you actually have? It was not long, was it?
No, so I think I finished end of Feb and I spent most of March recce in the Lakes, Mears and Waters. So sort of linking up different legs. And then I attempted that the 1st of April. So I think I had like a month where I was recceing the legs and yeah, going straight into that.
And I think you only had like 5 weeks rest or something, didn't you?
Yeah. Yeah. I think
and
it was about
I don't know if we've talked much about the Lakes, Mears and Waters on the pod before. It's 100 miles, isn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah. Well, I managed to shorten the route exactly to 100 miles.
Okay.
I think previously it was 105.
Okay.
So I managed to sort of change it slightly just to cut a little bit of distance off.
And what's the idea with it?
So for me, I wanted to really do it under 24 hours. So I knew Joss's time was just incredible. And it's so quick. So I tried to run some of the legs previous at that sort of pace. And,
okay,
you know, I personally couldn't do it. So yeah, for me, like trying to do it under 24 hours is like a huge achievement. And it had only been Joss who had done that under 24 at the time. Well,
okay,
still now actually. But so yeah, I just wanted to try and do 100 miles in under 24 hours with, you know, a good bit of height and, you know, good trails and stuff. Yeah. So,
and it links up, is it 26 different bodies of water in the lakes?
Yeah. So
Lake District.
Every lake, mere and water in the lakes. So. Yeah. It's pretty cool route actually. Goes to all different areas of the lake.
One thing that I wanted to ask you about was, as you related the kind of six attempts for your winter trilogy, did you find that did you go into it with really good systems, like for kit and what you were going to eat and how you were going to, how much you were going to carry? Or did you sort of, were you able to hone that kind of every time?
Yeah, I'd say I definitely honed that every time. Like I'd done solo stuff before, but for me, I've always taken more than what I need. So what I've always been worried about is setting off on, you know, a big round solo and unsupported without enough food. So, and especially like, you know, ones like the Ramsey where you're miles away from anywhere, it's just super remote. I didn't want to be all the way back there and like, you know, ate too much food. So, like I said earlier, like when I set off on the paddy, my bag probably weighed, I think when I weighed it was like 8 kilos, which is huge. It's massive. And then I got that down to, with kit, it was about 6 kilos. So I shedded, you know, a fair amount of weight off, stripped back a load of food. But yeah, I mean, I sort of condensed it down and honed it down sort of as the time went on. So if I did that first and maybe got even lighter, who knows, might have been different. But just you got to work out what you need, what like how much food you're going to eat.
Yes, yeah.
And just try and strip back as much as you can, but safely.
it's a really difficult balance, isn't it? Like even in October there, or end of September, I went to try and get Tranter's record back off Jack Hensel.
Yeah.
But and the weather wasn't great, and it's October, so it's not even winter, but it's a bit colder, you know. But I just couldn't afford to take like any stuff. Like I had an emergency beacon and then like a foil blanket, and then like, you know, no extra stuff other than, you know, because you just needed to be able to carry the weight of food basically.
Yeah.
And you know, you're going into like a full beans effort, and I was just quite conscious of you are kind of cutting it pretty fine. And it's not even winter, so going into winter obviously there's There's all sorts of factors why that
Exactly.
Up. But that is also what makes it, well, to me anyway, makes it really exciting and interesting is, you know, you need to do it safely, you need to have some sort of contingency, but you've also got to commit to, I suppose, looking after yourself. And
yeah, it's just getting the balance, isn't it?
Yeah.
It takes time to try and get that right. And yeah, as for me, like starting off at the start of winter to finishing at the end, I definitely improved that as I went on. So yeah, but it wasn't perfect at the start, that's for sure.
You guide people in winter all across the country?
Yeah. For me, it'd be pretty reckless if I went out on the hills with absolutely nothing and got into trouble. And yeah, it probably wouldn't be my wisest decision. So it's just trying to be careful.
But I suppose, yeah, going back into how you did it, you had all this experience.
Yeah.
You know, backing up behind you.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Yeah. Like the winter Wainwrights, for example, and other sort of things. But yeah, takes time, doesn't it?
which in itself, is just the Wainwrights is almost like too big for me to sort of get my head around. tell us what the stats for that. It's like 200 something peaks.
Yeah, so it's 214 hills in the lakes, which essentially, well, it's every Wainwright. So they're not like a specific height like the Munros. It's basically Alfred Wainwright's sort of favorite hills essentially, and he compiled them into these books. But yeah, I think me and John, we sort of decided that the route was a bit longer than originally thought. So we decided it was 350 miles, so not 318 or whatever it used to be. So I think, well, obviously with technology, it's improved like from when Steve Birkinshaw did it and Paul to like now. So we sort of agreed it was slightly longer than anticipated. And height-wise, it's about 45,000 meters. So yeah,
it's just such a huge undertaking. And what about your feet? I'm wondering, like, how did you manage your, particularly your feet and your hands and keeping them?
Yeah. So help from other people, essentially. Yeah. Like I had an amazing support crew. And like I mentioned a minute ago, like a lot of people that helped, I'd never actually met before. So I've never done a race still to this day, but I've never been in that like running community. So I knew a lot of runners. So I just sort of approached them and I explained what I was going to have an attempt at, and whether they'd be willing to help. So, and yeah, thankfully everyone sort of said yes. And it turned out an amazing week or just over that. But yeah, I mean, if I didn't have the help from like, you know, a best friend, Matt, for example, like driving the van around and looking after me, cooking for me, my feet might have been in a different different place. But yeah, lots of shoes, lots of socks.
Yeah.
Because when you're doing the round, for example, you're going into different checkpoints, a different road sort of checkpoints. So you can always like change shoes if you need to. And yeah, you can always have that like change of kit. And just having that like support is just vital and something like that. It's huge.
Did you, in your winter trilogy, in those three big rounds, did you have issues with getting cold or
when I had a go at the Ramsey the first time, I got, you know, really really cold. I think I stopped for maybe like a couple of minutes to try and work out what I was going to do, and just stopping for literally like 2 minutes and not thinking about putting another layer on. I got like, you know, I could start to feel myself getting like super super cold, like struggling to like think properly. And the same again when I fell into the bog on the paddy, that sort of cold water just zapped away my heat instantly. And
did the slippery witch get you? Yeah. Coming off the hill of the slippery witch.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I think
there's
some
big bogs in there.
Oh, he's huge. Yeah. So yeah, I just literally went above my hips. Probably like actually when I took my top off, or when I took my jacket off, you could see the mud sort of mark halfway up my chest. And yeah, it was freezing. but other than that, I think when I did the bob, I managed to stay pretty warm most of the day. I just kept moving as much as I can. I don't think I stopped once, to be fair, other than just filling up water. And then the same again with the paddy. I just tried to just keep moving all the time. yeah, I never really stopped. And that was vital, I think.
You've said, obviously, you know, you've done the real amazing full supported Wainwrights. Then you thought, I want a different challenge. I want the kind of totally unsupported kind of thing. So quite contrasting in that way. But what are the sort of common themes linking all these challenges together?
For me, it's like enjoying long days in the hills. So, you know, going out in, I often choose like really good weather windows. So having like an amazing experience in the hills, whether that be with friends or by yourself, it's just amazing experience. And then sharing that with people as well. It's such an amazing day, really. And doing that all around different parts of the UK as well. So, you know, Scotland's absolutely amazing for scenery. It's probably some of the best in the world. And to do that on a really nice day, there's nothing better in my eyes. And then also, like, you know, the personal challenge as well. So maybe if you set yourself a goal and working towards that, I quite enjoy that sometimes. And especially because I don't do any races, that's my like race in my own head. So yeah, trying whatever elements.
Do you find that, is that a sort of a conscious decision, like not to race, so you've got more capacity for these sorts of challenges?
I don't know, really. Like, racing's never really interested me, or hasn't yet. It's just like the long days in the hills.
Yeah,
that's my real enjoyment. And choosing like good weather windows to do that. I probably will do a race one day. It's just, I don't know.
My housemate, she's just finished the Munros on Neudart last weekend.
Oh, yeah.
She just quietly goes off and she's been doing these amazing link ups of Munros, like 30K and 50K days. You know, she doesn't race. I think she doesn't do organized races running, but she's sort of in, you know, she's doing these huge days and, you know, running them in a running kit and sort of being very humble about it. And I was saying, that's amazing. That's the kind of, in one sense, I would say that's sort of a purer kind of appreciation of the hills, because she's just going out loving these hills and doing these great link ups, which I'm like, oh, yeah, I want to do that one and that link up and that one.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. There's so many good ones out there.
So I think a lot of people can relate to that, just enjoyment in just having a great day out, long day out, and like I said in the intro, lots of sunrise to sunsets.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Seen my fair share of good ones anyway, that's for sure. I just love being in the hills, really, and just awesome.
Is the need to do these things and the want to do these kind of challenges, is it always healthy?
But as time's gone on, you sort of push how much you can do. So for example, like back when I first started running, like the Bob Graham was like this huge thing, and you probably put it on this pedestal of how big it is. And then as time's progressed, you sort of feel a need to maybe go further. So for example, when I, you know, if I started running, I thought, well, I remember actually when Paul Turney, a good friend of mine, did the Wainwrights, and when I helped him on it, but when he finished and he sort of made a film about it, I just thought it was such a huge challenge, and I would never ever comprehend doing something like that. And then what was it, like 3-4 years later, I ended up doing it myself. So it's amazing how much your mind like shifts to what's possible. I guess there's no need to do it. It's for me, it's more the want to have, or just basically see how much you can push your body into, like how challenging it can be, and what's achievable. So, and then having like, you know, weeks worth of experience condensed into one. That's pretty cool.
Yeah, I mean, literally my next question was, most people would be delighted with one of these outings over a year. And clearly, you've got an incredible drive, but also an incredible sort of ability to recover and then get on to the next one. Can you talk a bit about your recovery rate or any tips, anything you think that's sort of works well for you?
So again, like once when I did all this stuff over, what was it, like 6 months, I did, well, actually when I did the winter Wainwrights, I never anticipated doing another one, but it was like a couple of weeks later, I decided to have another go to see if I can go as quick as I can. And then I ended up doing that 3 months later. So I ended up doing, you know, my second Wainwright round 3 months, which I guess when you think about it, or when, you know, rewind back a couple of years, that people would definitely not advise doing something as big so close to what you'd done. But my recovery seemed to go all right. I felt I was training again. I felt all right. I didn't feel too fatigued. So yeah, and anyway, I ended up doing the round again and getting, you know, a relatively good time. And then I continued that for a little while. So when I did that, I think I had maybe like 20 days off after completing the summer Wainwrights, and I had a go at the Ascent Traverse. Again, with working up there, I had a bit of time off and you know, went in and did that. So my mindset probably after doing the Wainwrights had changed to like, oh, okay, I can have a go and do these things and not feel too bad afterwards. So yeah, once when I did the big three of this winter, and then I carried on with my fitness doing different rounds after that. Yeah, it seemed right for me. But in terms of tips of what I did, so when I started off with the sort of big three of a winter, I wasn't doing any further training between each one.
Okay.
So I essentially like laid off running after having an attempt. I might have gone for a few little short runs, but I wasn't like stretching my body and doing more. So I was actually trying to rest up for the next attempt. So I just tried to eat as healthily as I could, you know, stay hydrated and just try and stay focused on having another attempt at one, you know, a couple of weeks later or whatever it might be. But yeah, I mean, I didn't do anything different. I guess it's just, I don't know. My body clearly can adapt to to the stress. But
do you find when you're, you know, obviously when you're back to work after one of these rounds, like, because you're having big hill days climbing or, you know, mountaineering, are you then able to do running as well, or do you have to?
Yeah. So when
be
I
be careful there.
Well, yeah, you still have to be careful. And, you know, when I told people what I was doing and when I had work next, I imagine my employers were probably a little worried of like, is he capable of doing that? But, so I essentially, when I did the cooling round, I worked on the ridge for, was it like 4 or 5 days? Just, you know, every time you go on the cooling, you do over 1,000 meters of height. So they're probably not the best prep for it. But yeah, essentially I worked all week. Maybe like 4 or 5 days, and then I didn't have a day off. I just went and had a go at the rounds sort of immediately after. So I think I had like the evening off, and then I started like, I think my alarm went off at like 4:30 in the morning or something. So yeah, I don't know. I can clearly tolerate it. Yeah,
just real high volume and
But I think it did hit me this summer, because I completely like, when I did the Lakes, Mears and Waters, I sort of like laid off running a bit, and I had about 3 months of like not doing any training whatsoever. Okay. And literally just try and, you know, make the season of summer, like my training, for example, like getting up hills, just resort back to almost where I started. And then in the last couple of months, I started training again. And yeah, I think the rest was definitely worthwhile.
So it was relative rest. You were climbing and walking rather than.
Sorry, it's my dog. Come here.
Yeah, rather than running.
All right, Ralphie, come here.
The doggy's getting a bit bored, aren't you?
But yeah, yeah, just, yeah, I don't know, just for me, it was just trying to make sure the rest in between each round was worth it. Not worth it. It was sort of like just making the most of it. So not stretching too much and doing too much in a relatively short space of time. So yeah, other than that, I don't do anything different. I was just, yeah, just
brilliant.
Being me.
You've already told us a few examples, but can you, I'm wondering about like the toughest parts, the sort of low points. Were there any particular ones where you struggled?
I remember doing the Coulon round and getting near the end just before Clack Glass, and it turned dark, so you know, sun had set. There was a bit of moon, but you couldn't really see too much. And obviously, you know, you got a bit of sort of scrambling and climbing. And I remember seeing the tower of Clack Glass.
Okay.
And thinking like, oh, I've got to make my way across this in the pitch black by myself at the very, like, near the end of the round. So your mind almost like starts doubting yourself and, you know, am I capable of doing this? So I think, you know, when I looked at that and started thinking about it, I probably hit a little bit of a low point. But then once you start, like, you know, going across and you know you've done it many of times before and you know you can do it, it sort of quite quickly changes back. That was probably my recent one. And then there was probably a low point, definitely on the bob, like just before going up Skiddaw at the end. You know, my legs definitely start to feel it. Felt it coming up Blencathra.
You'd be going sort of up the bog.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah. Up the bog and then up the back of Skiddaw. But I was near the end, so I sort of, again, had a low point, put a load of sugar in me. So yeah, I think I might have had a gel just to try and boost my energy. And then just ride it out for a bit. And then, yeah, all of a sudden it's like, oh yeah, got some fresh legs again. That was probably another one. And then on the Ramsey, like I mentioned, I was definitely anxious before going up onto Annett Beg. And not only that, it was getting off of Annett Moor down towards the Col before Carmel Drag. Because that, you know, it's quite steep, and especially if it's solid neve, which it was, you sort of start playing things in your head and like, oh, once if I'm not going to stop, like this, that, and the other. But again, you just got to try and have positive thoughts and put a load of sugar in you and just, yeah, hopefully, well, not hopefully, but yeah, just believe that you can get through it, essentially.
Yeah, it's a good time to eat, isn't it? Before you've got some kind of crazy thing.
Yeah, that's what I seem to do, really, is if you have a low point, it's just what you're probably lacking is just energy. Yeah. So just try and have some sort of like sugary, you know, food. It seems to sort it out pretty good.
Did you have any stomach issues on sort of any of these rounds or generally?
I was generally all right, actually. Yeah, I tried to eat like real food as well. Okay. So not just like gels. I have a couple of gels as like a backup.
Yeah.
A lot of my stuff's like maybe a bit like half tailwind and then half water and then a mix of like real food from like sausage rolls to sandwiches and everything in between. it seems to suit me well and don't seem to get much stomach issues, which is pretty good.
I'm interested yet in how clearly you've got a huge amount of motivation and drive to get out, particularly like in the winter trilogy, the attempts, the sort of failed in inverted commas attempts, like they make it harder. Were they help in a way to push you on?
Yeah, I mean, no plan goes perfect, does it? There's always some sort of setbacks. And I think when I went into it, I didn't expect as many as there was. So I didn't expect out of six attempts to have like three fails. And that was maybe a bit of naivety from me, really. But I think it was probably good that I had them because I realized what I needed to do to maybe improve and maybe look at conditions or forecast a bit more in detail. But sometimes you just never know until you're out there. So in some ways, yeah, it's good that I had those failed attempts. And equally though, there's still really good days. You know, I remember the day when I had first gone on the Ramsey, like that was an amazing sunrise. You know, it was so white. And even if I carried on, like it would have taken so long, but I realized that pretty early on, rather than, you know, being stubborn and just carrying on, I think I might have got myself into difficulty. So yeah, on reflection, I'm glad I definitely had them.
And maybe that's the sort of nub of why these challenges are so alluring. You know, that even if you don't do the sort of the full round or whatever you're planning to do, you're still having this great day out working it all out.
Yeah, yeah. And then, like you said at the start, like it's the sunrises and sunsets as well that make it pretty special. So it was definitely some definitely good times, even though I didn't complete it. So
you've been nominated for the FRA Long Distance Award. What would it mean to you if you received it?
I'd be very, very satisfied. So on that, you know, on that plate, there's so many amazing athletes. And to have my name like etched into that as well would be accomplishment, that's for sure. So yeah, it'd be awesome. And there's so much history in there as well, you know, from Martin Soane, when did he start? 86, was it?
Okay.
I think it's 89, yeah. So that's sort of when it started, I think. But since then, you know, think about how many amazing athletes have done so many amazing things. So yeah, pretty cool. Yeah.
And what's amazing is that every year there's sort of recently there seems to be more and more things that are sort of vying, because I know the competition's is tough this year with, you know, other stuff that people have been getting on with. So there's Andy Berry, there's who else?
Jamie Aarons,
yeah, of course, for the winner round. Yeah,
Elsie Davis. Yeah, there's quite a
Elsie Davis was a winter women's Bob Graham record.
Yeah.
So there has been an explosion in sort of, I suppose, the numbers doing long distance running challenges in recent years. Like, what do you think are sort of the main factors driving that change, that explosion?
I think you saw it when maybe Paul Turney did his Wainwright round. If you think how many people had an attempt since then. So maybe since when Joss did his, like Steve, there was quite a big gap between him and Steve Birkinshaw.
Like, I think years and years.
Yeah, yeah.
It was a decade.
Yeah. So I think people's mindset probably changed of what's capable. So when Steve Birkinshaw did the Wainwrights, you know, I've spoke to Paul about it, but it definitely inspired him to have a go. And then since Paul, like, you know, there's quite a lot of people that have had a go and got around it. So yeah, I assume for me, like the mindset of what's capable has changed. And how much recovery time you can get away with in terms of like sleep and stuff in between. Cause I'm sure when, you know, Donnie Campbell did his Monroe round, I'm sure that probably inspired, you know, Jamie to do her round, and maybe her view on how much sleep she could get away with over that period of time. I'm sure that probably had an impact as well. So yeah, I'm sure as time goes on, people just realize, oh, okay, maybe you can do this and you can do that.
Yeah, it pushes what's possible, doesn't it?
That's it, yeah.
Because if you're interested in these things, you go and look at what was,
yeah,
what's the current record of what's been done before.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah, there's always slight improvements here and there, and it's pretty cool to see that as well. And like, yeah, I'm sure, you know, go out, push as hard as you can, and then someone else comes along and does it, and you realize, oh, okay, well, maybe you can go quicker. And I'm sure you've had that with with Jack and previous people. So yeah, it's just that sort of friendly competition, isn't it?
Yeah, that progression. And barriers being, the classic one in running is Rogers Bannister breaking the the 4 minute mile, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly.
Then sort of proved it could be done, and then lots more people. Well,
yeah, same thing with the marathon. Lots, yeah. Who knew that a sub 3 marathon was capable and you know, or possible? So yeah, limits get stretched.
Can we talk a bit about your winter Munros plan?
Yeah. So I've put it off for a couple of years actually, just because of the scale of it. So I remember when I finished the Winter Wainwrights, like that was the next thing that I really wanted to have a go at. And then when you start looking in to how big it is and how much like logistics involved, it depends on what style you want to do, but it's just ginormous. Like you think of the Wainwrights, like it's like that, but you know, over however you want to do it, but it's over like a month or 2 months, so a week. So that really put me off. And then recently I've decided to basically try and have a go, or plan to have a go, in the winter of 25 and 26.
Okay.
So give myself an achievable sort of plan to get there. So 2 years or 2 winter seasons, I feel like it's hopefully doable. I've still got to do quite a bit of sort of stuff in between that. So I'm planning on doing it self-propelled. So I'm planning on like cycling and, you know, kayaking and bits in between.
So you're going to do a continuous traverse in the winter months.
That's the plan.
Of all the Munros.
Which hasn't been done yet. So Mark Moran did it by vehicle.
Yeah.
Kevin Woods did it by vehicle.
Yes.
Again, see if that's possible.
Wow.
Within that winter season. But yeah, I mean, just getting out on your bike and stuff as well, like it's different to running, isn't it? And I would like to try and ski to a, you know, reasonably good level, enough that I can ski tour over hills if it allows. And yeah, there's a few things that need to fall into place in order to have a go. But
that'd be so cool if you could use the skis, if it just happened that, you know, particularly the eastern hills, well, anywhere really, but if it worked out to use some skis in the middle of a big long challenge, which has got the bike and the
It's just I think
everything,
if that goes to plan, and like I don't know, say we get an amazing winter, like there's nothing that can top that. I think it'd just be such an amazing experience. Imagine being on the hill like all winter and different weathers and stuff, and what you'd see and do and share with people. It'd just be it'd be fantastic. And again, equally, I know that there's going to be a lot of like bad weather as well, so it's going to be like really windy at times that you're not going to be able to go on the hill, and it's going to be really snowy that you can't drive to different places. So however you attack that, and it's just huge in terms of scale. So that's the plan.
Massive good luck with that when it comes around. Get in touch if you're
thank you very much.
Need some help.
I definitely will.
Anything sort of in the pipeline coming up sort of before then?
So like I say, over the summer I've had quite a long period of time off, so I want to try and just build my fitness back up again. I'm gonna have a go just in the lakes actually, but there's the Cumbrian Traverse, which is almost like a straight line through a load of hills. I'm gonna have a go sort of at a fast time of that in winter, so that'd be my first sort of thing to do. And then who knows, I've got my WMCI assessment, which is like the highest qualification that you can do in the UK in terms of like taking people winter climbing and stuff. So that's in March, and my priority will probably be working towards that, but fingers crossed I can fit in another decent running challenge in between now and then. But working through stuff, and there's definitely stuff in Scotland that I wouldn't mind having a go at.
It's it's always inspiring to look at the maps and speak to people, because there's just so much, so many options and new things to come up with. And
there's just endless amounts.
Great. Thanks very much, James. It's been a real pleasure, and feeling very inspired.
Thank you very much. Cheers, Manny.
Oh, are you, this will come out after KMF and everything, but have you got a film yourself coming out? I forgot to mention that at the time.
Yeah. So it's been a few years in the making, but essentially when I did the Winter Wainwrights, it was filmed by a good friend of mine called Che, but him and an editor have essentially put together like a 45-minute sort of film that's going to get premiered on the 2-year anniversary of the Wainwrights, so on the 8th of December. So
cool.
Yeah, so pretty interesting.
Phil.
Yeah.
Thanks, folks. That's the end of episode 32 with James Gibson, and see you next time.
Cheers. Thank you.
Thanks.